Boys have done a fine job, and I know you're proud of them. It's the time of day that, I really admire those of you who have stayed for the service. Ella J. has done this a few times, and I know the 1 o'clock service, you really have a desire to be here. I know pro football's on this afternoon. I know many of you have a recliner that's calling your name, and I know that there are a lot of other things that are going on in our lives. I hope we can talk just for a few minutes about family. I realize that these are trying times. We discussed that a little bit in our Bible class session today. Some of the things that, our kids are hearing about. Some of the things that they're aware of. And moms and dads, it's not unusual for your kids to come home and tell you what's happening with some of their friends. And I can tell you that this past week there were arrests of some high school students over in Cherokee County. Which is, of course, Canton, Georgia, and close to us. They had a plot to blow up the school. And it wasn't just something they had done on paper. They actually had developed the devices that could have carried out that threat. It's hard for me to comprehend. It's hard for me to imagine. It shouldn't be for some of us that are my age. I remember the fact that there were some real testy young men that used to drop M80 firecrackers, a high-powered firecracker down the commode of the men's restroom. And for those of you that are younger that never thought about that, don't. That's just simply something you don't want to do. A lot of what our young people are facing and their friends and all are not unusual circumstances. These are things that, we need to realize they've been going on for a long time. And I do hope that we can be mindful that we have a responsibility really to make an investment in the lives of these young people. You do a lot of that with your Lads to Leaders program here. And I know that you have an active youth program, and most of these young people attend Bible camp, and a lot of good things going on. But I know that there's a lot of people today talking about how we can make an investment in the future. And I want to share a true story with you to begin with. A few years ago, I had the opportunity to do the devotional for the Georgia legislature to open the session, and I shared thoughts that I'd had for a long time. I can tell you that if I ever get another invite, this is how it's going to begin. There's a date that made a difference in my life, and I want to explain that date to you. It was December the 13th, 1955. It was 2 weeks before my third birthday. I was born in the end of December, 1952. It was a Friday. It was a cold winter day. And my maternal grandfather was a steel rigger at the Copper Company at Copper Hill, Tennessee. That morning, a cable broke and a beam hit my grandfather right below the legs. It severed his legs. He lay there for almost 2 hours knowing that his legs had been cut off while they brought a crane in and took the weight of that beam off of him. And when they removed the beam, he went into shock and, they took him to the local hospital. And there was an old army doctor who had come to the Copper Basin area who had been in World War II. And in the war, he had done a lot of amputations. He knew what to do for my grandfather. He amputated his legs above the knees, and he saved his life. My grandfather was 51 years old, a father of 7 children. There were actually, I believe, 5 of the 7 that was married at that time. And I can also tell you that my grandfather had been raised in the mountains of Gilmer County. He had moved to Fanning County in 1919 with a covered wagon. It was pulled by 2 oxen that he had broke to yoke. Some of you who are old know what that means. Actually, those 2 oxen would pull together. It took him 2 weeks, 2 solid weeks, to take that wagon from the east part of Gilmer County to Fanning County. He came back in a horse and buggy, and he picked up my grandmother and her oldest child. It took 3 days, solid driving, in a horse and buggy to get back home. And she and a 1-year-old daughter, along with my grandfather, spent 3 days on the road. That meant 2 nights they had to stay on the road. They actually would stop and ask someone if they could spend the night with them. We wouldn't think of doing that today. December the 13th, 1955. My granddad sat in a wheelchair for a year until his stumps healed. And I remember us taking him to Atlanta. It's down on Peachtree Street. It's not far from the marquee where we go for Lads to Leaders. There is a building where they make artificial limbs. And I also remember when the postcard came into our mailbox, we didn't have a phone back those days, telling us it was time for him to come to rehab. We dropped him off over in Decatur on a Sunday afternoon. We left him. Friday night after my dad got off work, we drove back down from the mountains. My dad went in to get my grandfather, and I never will forget, he walked out of that rehab hospital on wooden legs with half crutches, and he got in the car and he came home. On Monday morning, he went back to work. They allowed him to be the person who ran the scale house, who weighed the trucks in and out at that copper company. He also was the paymaster on Friday. And you said, well, what effect did that have on your life? For someone who had always been an outdoorsman, who had done a lot of outdoor work, it changed his life. But the biggest thing and the biggest reason, and parents, grandparents, I want you to know this. Never once did I ever hear he or my grandmother blame or complain because of what had happened. Attitude made such a difference. I can also tell you that, well, I guess life is what we make it many times. But let me just share with you some thoughts today and tell you that we need to make an investment in our young people. And when we think about all that God's Word has to say, I want us to remember when the Apostle Paul wrote to the church in Ephesus in Ephesians chapter 5, you remember well how he talks about the husband and wife relationship. And if time allowed today, we could talk about marriage. We could talk about the strengthening of families. And I certainly encourage you to read Ephesians chapter 5. He reminds us, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, that he gave himself for it. And certainly we need to be doing that. But after he finished those remarks, he talks to us about parent and children relations. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the nurture, the discipline, and instruction of the Lord. You know, it's interesting how that he would have given these thoughts to the early church. And someone says, well, that's not the way it is today. That's not what happens. Beloved, I disagree. I really believe this is the way God intends. And I do hope that we can understand. Sometimes we go back and we forget that God's Word does address where we are today and what we need to be about. Husbands do need to remember to love our wives as we love ourselves. Wives, you need to certainly remember your husbands and have that respect and honor for them. But just remind ourselves that God knows best. And when He speaks and He tells us these things, He's reminding us about how we can live and get by in this world. We talked just a moment earlier about the fact that we all need mentors. And I realize today we've got some families at LJ that, well, they're not really what we think of as families because they're only one of them. For whatever reason, families are getting smaller. For whatever reason, there's a lot of couples that are choosing not to have children. That's not unscriptural. But let me just remind you of this. When we find ourselves in situations, we need to do the very best we can. When I moved to LJ many years ago, there was a widow lady that lived across the road from us. And every time I cut my grass, I would go across the road and I would mow her grass. And one day she asked me, she said, "Why do you do this?" And my explanation was this. Young people, listen to me. I told her, my grandparents, both my grandmothers, lived 40 miles away. And it wasn't possible for me to go and to cut their grass, but I would hope someone would look after them. And she was right there. I felt honored to be able to do that for her. Miss Essie was a dear lady that appreciated what I did. We've got to understand that I think about my children. When I moved to LJ, my daughter was 4 months old. And 2 years later, we had a son. And ladies, I don't know what my wife would have done had there not been those who stepped up to entertain my little girl while Susan took care of my son. But as a result of that, well, one of the families were the Holloway family, Clay and Violet Holloway. Clay and Violet had two sons, and each of those two sons had three sons each. And one day Susan was telling someone about the Holloways, and she said, "You know, they only have boys. They have two sons. Each of them have three grandsons. And my little girl, who was about 3 years old and maybe a few months old, looked up and she said, 'Mama, they got one girl.'" And Susan looked at her and she said, "They got me." You see, Clay and Violet were Mamaw and Papaw Holloway. Violet died several years ago. She experienced cancer. And yes, my kids took it just as personally as if they were their very own grandparents. Brother Clay died 2 years ago. In his 90s and kept his mind right up until the last day. And I can tell you that both my son and my daughter were there to grieve their papa and his passing. You know, there have been a lot of others. Well, they didn't call anybody else mamma and papa, but they had a lot of aunts and uncles. One of those families were the Callahans, and I will never forget. Last time I preached here, I had visitors from Covington that were the Callahan family. But the Callahans that were in LJ, Jack and Eulene, the year my daughter turned 16, she wanted to know if they could go spend the night with Jack and Eulene. And both of them went. 16-year-old girl, 14-year-old boy, they go to the Callahans. And the next afternoon they called and they said, "Jack and Eulene want us to stay another night." And they stayed another night. And then there was another night, and before we knew it, they had actually stayed with Jack and Eileen for a week. One of the grandchildren, the Callahan's grandchildren, called about midweek, and she wanted to know. Jeannie answered the phone, and she said, "What are you doing at my Meemaw's?" And Jeannie told her, said, "We're having the best time." That's probably not what their granddaughter wanted to hear. You know, Brother Jack passed away a few years back, and it was a family loss. It wasn't just someone in the church who passed away. It was family. And his lovely wife's in a special care home and over in Dahlonega, and she doesn't know anybody now. It's amazing, though. They still send her cards. They still have been to visit with her. But the biggest thing we have going for us in the church is the fact that we can be family. There's a lot of people in our society, in our world today, that are alone. And I don't mind telling you, yes, I've got a son that lives in LJ, and I've got two lovely grandchildren that are right there. And their grandma, Grammy, sees them almost every day. But there's two over in Birmingham, and I don't get to see them often. And Susan doesn't get to be Grammy very much there. Matter of fact, she has a sister that my brother-in-law preaches for the River Chase Church in Birmingham. And her sister Jane and Dwayne have spoiled my grandbabies in Birmingham, much like they would have spoiled their own. I can tell you that we need to understand each other. We need to help each other. And it's so important for us to keep that in mind. It's not something that, well, we just need to listen. We need to be able to know what's going on in our families. We need to make sure the other person knows that we feel that they're important. I love this. Found a quote by Yogi Berra. And some of you that are younger don't mean anything when I use the name of Yogi Berra, but Yogi Berra was the catcher for the old New York Yankees team of the 60s. He was a coach then when he finished his catching career, and he was famous for his Yogi-isms, and one of them was this: you can hear an awful lot by just listening. Moms and dads, we need to listen. We need to hear what our kids are having to say. We need to do all that we possibly can. James 1:19 tells us that we should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And we don't, sometimes we just don't know all that means. But you know, it's important for us that we think about what we can do. Secondly, we need to remember, and young people, you know, I hope you hear this. And I'm saying it to mamas and daddies and grandmothers and granddaddies. I have a lot of young people that have come to me and they're upset because they've got a friend who's making bad choices and bad decisions. And they want to know, what can I do? What can I do to help this person to understand it's a bad choice, a bad decision? We can pray for them. But let me remind you that it's so important for us to set the example for them. And, you know, we need to make sure that we keep our priorities where they need to be. We need to keep our commitments. And we need to understand that that's so important to us. And we need to be the kind of individuals that are going to be there to set the example. And is it easy to do that? No. But remember what Paul told Timothy: to be thou an example. And we've got that responsibility. We've got that before us, and we need to never forget. I would beg you to remember the importance of keeping our word. I may have used this example when I was here a few years ago, but those of you that have heard the example before, I beg your pardon, and I hope you'll allow me to tell this story. Back in the early 1800s, And those of you that are studying history, it's known as the War of 1812. It was where the colonists were being attacked, and there was a general by the name of Andrew Jackson that was fighting the French and Indian folk down in Alabama. And they were whipping us. They were winning the battles. And Andrew Jackson was smart enough to know what to do. He actually came to North Georgia, and he asked the Cherokees if they would come to Middle Alabama and help fight the Creek Indians. There was the strongest village of the Creeks in a place called Dadeville, Alabama. It's actually known as Horseshoe Bend. And the Cherokees went with Andrew Jackson all the way to Middle Alabama, and there they prepared for the battle. The strongest village of the Creeks was in a horseshoe in the middle of the Tallapoosa River. And any time they were attacked, they would go to the back of that horseshoe. They had their canoes. They would get in the canoes. They would paddle away. But this time, the Cherokees swam the Tallapoosa River. They cut holes in the canoes. And when that battle began, and when Andrew Jackson and his forces started forcing the Creeks to the back of that horseshoe to escape, they couldn't. They got there, and the canoes had holes in them. They had to surrender. You hear a lot about the War of 1812. I can tell you that was really the deciding battle, because that's where the Creeks ceased to help the French. You know, it's interesting how that Andrew Jackson told those Cherokees when they came back to North Georgia that they could keep their land as long as the oaks grew and the waters ran. We had one chief that, well, lived right there close to Ellijay. His name was White Path. And that stayed so true. That promise was kept. They could keep their land as long as the oaks grew and the waters ran. But then there was a day that they discovered gold. And they actually discovered it within a mile of Chief White Path's house. A nugget was found. And then within days, they found nuggets of gold in Dahlonega. And if you want to know what caused the Cherokee removal, the place known as the Trail of Tears, it wasn't necessarily about the land. It was about the gold. Andrew Jackson at that time lived in the White House in Washington. And Chief White Path, along with some of those other Cherokee chiefs, rode horseback all the way from North Georgia to Washington, D.C. to see Andrew Jackson. They went to the White House and they asked him, "Would you honor your word? Would you keep your word to us? Would you let us keep our land? Because you've told us we could keep it as long as the oaks grow and the waters ran." And he said, "I'm sorry. I can't keep that promise. You're going to have to leave your land and go to a place in Oklahoma." Chief White Path came back to Gilmer County. He left with his family on the Trail of Tears. He died in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and was buried in an unmarked grave by the side of the road. You know, I think of that illustration, and I think about how sad it is that there are so many of us that, like Andrew Jackson, we might say something and then we don't keep our word. But mamas and daddies, let me say to you, grandmothers and granddaddies, let me tell you this: keep your word to your children. It's not just about today. It may very well be about eternity. Young people, remember how important your word is. Remember how important it is for you to honor God and always to do the things that He would ask you to do. And it don't need to be something we do out of resentment or that we do out of bitterness, but we do it because of all that He's done for us. And it tells us that Christ loved us while we were yet sinners. You know, we make bad choices. We have bad decisions in our life. We just don't need to stay there when we realize what we've done. I realize, and I talk to a lot of people who say, you know, I'd live the Christian life, but you know so-and-so over there? He used to be a part of the church, or is a part of the church today? Oh, and this is a true story. My very first work was in Columbus, Georgia. I had a Bible study set up, and it was actually the second study where I'd gone into this home and opened the Bible with these folk. And we were studying one night, and I found out where the fellow worked, and I said, oh, I know somebody that works there. They go to church with us. And when I told him the man's name, the fellow had his Bible open, and he closed it. He said, if that man's a Christian, I don't want any part of what you got to offer. He wouldn't even study with me. It broke my heart on two accounts. Number one, I had a disappointment of the study ending that way. But number two, it broke my heart because I love that brother. He was there every time the doors were opened. But this fellow proceeded to tell me that on the job he told the dirtiest jokes. He was the most vulgar person, not only with his jokes, but also the way he treated other individuals. And he said, I just don't want any part of it. I don't have to tell y'all that people are watching and they're looking for our example. Parents, grandparents especially, it begins in your home. It begins with your family. And when we hear about all these problems that are happening, when we hear about young people being arrested, you know, that was the very first thing that somebody said to me when they heard the news on Wednesday about the first two being arrested for trying to blow up Etowah High School. Where were the parents? Where were the parents? We've got to do better than that. We've got to be in the lives of our children. We've got to let our grandchildren know that we love them, but we also love the Lord, and we're trying to get us all to heaven by the very best means we can. And that's obedience to the Word of God. I'm going to go back to Ella J. this afternoon, and I'll be praying for you. I ask for your prayers, and I hope that we'll see each other again. If we don't hear, I know that we will on the other side. But this afternoon, we're going to offer an invitation. And if you're here and your life's not right with God, nothing would make me happier than to go away knowing that you have decided to do the right thing. Mamas and daddies, grandmother and granddaddy, are you doing the right thing? Have you obeyed the gospel? Are you setting the example of what it means to be a Christian? It's not excluding you, young people. If you're the age of accountability and you know that your life's not right with God, it's time to do something about it. I can remember so many nights when I was a teenager praying, God, don't come. Lord, don't come. I'm not ready. But I also remember the night, a Thursday in October, a cold winter night, when the preacher was there when I got home from football practice, and he said, I want to talk to you. He asked if I wasn't ready to obey the gospel, and I knew the time had come. Some of you might need to be asked that question. I told him that I knew what to do, and yes, I was ready. He wanted to know if there's anybody I wanted to be there. Talk about mentors. One of the elders of the Blue Ridge Church by the name of Lewis Ralston had taught the teenage Bible class for so many years. And Brother Lewis was the only person who had asked, and he hadn't just asked me one time. He hadn't just asked me twice. He'd asked me 3-4 times, Butch, are you not ready to obey the gospel? Are you not ready to become a Christian? And I told the preacher that night, yes, I want Brother Lewis to be there. It was already after dark, and Brother Lewis was one of those old fellows that went to bed with the chickens and got up with the roosters. And let me tell you, I got him out of bed. He met us at the Blue Ridge Church building to watch me obey the gospel. I never have forgotten that. Let me tell you, that was the greatest decision that I'd ever made. And that night I went home and I pillowed my head and I prayed, Lord, come now, because I'm ready. If you're not prepared, if you're not ready for the judgment, why not get ready? Why not do it today while we have this invitation, while we have this opportunity? And just remember, things can happen in a moment that will change not only your life, but the life of your family. the life of your grandchildren and the generations to come. If you need to respond to the invitation, I want you to come as together we stand and sing.
He tint his skies with heavenly hue and framed the world with his great mind. There is a God, he is alive, in him we live and we survive. From the star God.